If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic abuse or violence, please get help before it's too late by calling the National Domestic Abuse Hotline at 800-799-SAFE or 800-799-7233.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
This is part two of the disappearance and brutal murder of Delisa Kelly. If you haven't listened to part one, we highly suggest doing so before going any further. That said, the following is a brief summary of part one. On Friday, March 7th, 2014, at approximately 6 p.m., 24-year-old mother Delisa Michelle Kelly left her grandmother's home in Oak Cliff to go to the wake of her best friend Kiki, who died in a tragic car accident the previous week. Delisa set off on foot after having trouble finding a ride by phone. Since she knew plenty of folks in the suburban Dallas neighborhood, having grown up there, Delisa figured she had a good chance at running into someone she knew who'd give her a lift. At 6:09 p.m., Delisa Kelly was caught on a surveillance camera entering a gas station/convenience store called Stop and Save, which is about a third of a mile from her grandmother's home, around a six-minute walk. This footage wasn't obtained by police until days later, long after it was too late. At 6:13 p.m., she can be seen on the same store's outside surveillance footage getting into the passenger side of a blue car. About 25 minutes later, Delisa unwittingly called her sister, Jasmine, who heard disturbing things on the other end. A male's voice could be heard, as could the sounds of Delisa being beaten as she screamed for this male to stop. The call disconnected and Jasmine began a text exchange with Delisa's phone a few minutes later after her calls went unanswered. The first text coming from Delisa's end said, "Call you in a minute." Jasmine replied asking if he was hitting her. He meant Delisa's fiancé, who the family wasn't fond of and who had exhibited major control issues when it came to Delisa's social and family life. The next text from Delisa's phone said that he thought she'd been with another man. Jasmine texted back, "So what did he do?" There was no reply. Delisa Kelly's sister was in a state of panic and called their mother and grandmother. No one could get a hold of Delisa. In fact, the calls went straight to voicemail. About an hour and a half later, Delisa's grandmother called 911. They told 911 about the accidental call, the male's voice, the beating, and the young mother's screams, and that no one could get a hold of her. Delisa, too, her grandmother told 911, was pregnant. Also, she wouldn't have left her 2-year-old son, Dunye, when she was expected home. The 911 operator told the frantic grandmother that she'd dispatch officers out to create a missing persons report. After speaking with her supervisor, Sergeant Kevin Mansell, however, no one was sent out. In the maddening recording of that call, the dispatcher can be heard explaining the situation to Sergeant Mansell, who makes light of it, along with inappropriate jokes and laughter. An attempt to ping Delisa Kelly's phone failed. The following day at 1 p.m., after her sister called the police back to get a missing persons report created, practically having to beg, police finally visited the home of Delisa's grandmother. It wasn't until Monday, March 10th, that the Dallas police began investigating the disappearance, nearly 3 days after Delisa vanished. Supposed sightings of Delisa were reported in downtown Dallas's northwest. Hospitals and morgues were checked, but there was no sign of her. By the time Delisa's cell phone provider was able to ping her phone, it was too late. The phone likely destroyed. The full 7 days went by with no clues as to the whereabouts of Delisa Kelly. The next Friday, everything ended in heartbreak and tragedy. At around 10 a.m. on Friday, March 14th, 2014, in East Oak Cliff, on the 1200 block of Presidio Avenue, a groundskeeper for a vacant property arrived to clean up and mow the grass. This home wasn't just waiting for someone to move in. Rather, it was abandoned and dilapidated, the doors and windows boarded up tight. When the groundskeeper approached the porch of the house, he was shocked to find the body of a young woman lying there. The scene was nightmarish. The woman had met a terrible fate. She'd been severely beaten in her face and head. She'd also been cut on her face. The groundskeeper immediately called the police. At 10:30 a.m., responding patrolmen contacted detectives at the Dallas Police Department's Youth Operations and Missing Persons Unit, who quickly made their way to the scene. The body, the detectives ascertained, matched the description of missing 24-year-old Delisa Kelly. Just after 12 p.m., Delisa's mother, LaChandra, learned by seeing the news that the body of a young black woman had been found in Oak Cliff. The thoughts going through LaChandra's head at that moment are unimaginable. She drove to Parkland Hospital, which no longer had a morgue. They told LaChandra she'd need to visit the Dallas County Medical Examiner's office, and she did. There, a receptionist told LaChandra that identifications aren't done the way they used to be. She wouldn't be able to view the body found earlier in the day. LaChandra was frantic, distraught, and lost, and the person answering her questions, she felt, wasn't helping. She didn't understand why this was so difficult. She just wanted to see the body to see if it was Delisa. A pathologist who'd heard of the situation unfolding and growing tenser approached. LaChandra explained to the pathologist that her daughter had been missing for a week. She had to know if the body found was her Delisa. The pathologist explained that LaChandra could not see the body, especially without a detective present, but began asking her a series of questions that might provide answers. The tattoo on the deceased that stretched from her chest to her thigh was among the subjects of the questions, and it was the moment LaChandra learned the fate of her firstborn daughter. The identification was made official by the Dallas police shortly thereafter. LaChandra began arranging for Delisa's body to be taken to the Golden Gate Funeral Home, where she'd see her daughter for the last time, and the brutal torture Delisa Kelly suffered at the hands of her killer, or killers. The autopsy of Delisa Kelly's body suggested a horrific death. On the night after she was found, Friday, March 14, 2014, the Dallas police announced that it was determined Delisa, after suffering a terrible beating, or most likely a series of beatings, had been strangled to death. There was no biological evidence of sexual assault, we're told, but one detail did suggest the possibility that at some point, a form of sexually motivated torture took place. However, that detail cannot be disclosed. I said above that Delisa most likely suffered a series of beatings because the autopsy also revealed that she was killed days after she disappeared. Obviously, she was held somewhere for that time, the depraved person or persons who beat and killed her doing God knows what. Though few details of the autopsy report were made public, LaChandra saw with her own eyes the brutality of her daughter's fate when Delisa's body was released to the Golden Gate Funeral Home.
The family is in charge of getting their makeup and hair and all that stuff done. To do that, you have to steep the body. And by that time, the body has done a lot of physical changes, especially in places where they've been, I guess I could say, experienced blunt force trauma. At this point, it's very visible. My baby had gas. She had a gash on her forehead. She had a gash on her cheek. And that's not even the cheek that was broken. Because she had a broken jaw. Her hand was crushed. I want to say it probably happened when they were struggling with the phone. She had cuts and bruises. This was personal. Whoever did it, it was personal.
On the evening of Monday, March 23rd, 2014, a wake was held for Delisa Kelly. Her funeral was the following day at Inspiring Body of Christ Church. Stating the obvious, Dallas Police Lieutenant Max Guerin told reporters at a press conference, "This is now a homicide investigation." That investigation was slow-moving. The Stop and Save convenience store where Delisa was last caught on camera getting into the blue car, identified at this point as a 1986 Mercury Grand Marquis, was about a fifth of a mile from the abandoned house where her body was discovered. A four-minute walk. Though it can't be seen in the footage that has been released to the public, police said a black male was seen getting into the driver's side of the vehicle, Delisa in the passenger side. The owner of the vehicle was identified in the first couple weeks of the investigation. We'll call him Travis Irving, which is not his real name. Though it's unclear exactly when 24-year-old Travis Irving was identified as the owner of the 1986 blue Mercury Grand Marquis, it was at some point after March 21, 2014, the date the man was taken into custody by the Dallas police, charged with indecency with a child, since the county jail is where detectives working Delisa's case found him. Dallas police had conducted many interviews by then, but finding Irving was actually a relevant lead. His then-current incarceration was hardly the only thing on his criminal record. In 1999, he was arrested, charged, and convicted for a felony count of unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. In November of 2005, Irving was arrested and charged with aggravated sexual assault of a child. He pleaded guilty and was given a two-year sentence. As far as Delisa's case is concerned, Irving only confused things. First of all, it appears as if it's unknown whether or not Irving and Delisa Kelly knew each other before she got into the car, but she did so willingly, as is evident by the Stop and Save surveillance footage, so it seems safe to assume that they did know one another. Now, you could just ask Travis Irving that question, but you wouldn't get a straight answer. He told police several different stories about giving Delisa a ride.
He changed his story three times. The first time is we rode around, chit-chat. Well, I want to say how he said we rode around, kicked it, smoked weed, and kicked back. That's what he said in the first story. Second story, he said he dropped her off at the funeral home. His third and final story is that he dropped her off at a storefront. Dropped her off at a storefront. But the police was not being specific as far as where he exactly, what stores he said he dropped her off. They just said that he dropped her off at a store, but we don't believe him because he's changed his story three times. And none of it is adding up. Neither story is adding up.
According to just about everyone, Delisa wasn't smoking weed since she found out she was pregnant, and anyway, the results of the toxicology tests showed no signs of drugs in her system. Irving also told Dallas detectives that he dropped Delisa off at her best friend's wake. Some witnesses did place Delisa in the parking lot of the funeral home during Kiki's visitation, but it isn't clear if these sightings are valid, and no one ever placed her inside. Police did seize Travis Irving's 1986 blue Mercury Grand Marquis. Whether they found anything or not isn't publicly known, but it seems they did not. The car was released and no charges were brought against the man. According to Delisa's mother, LaShondra, the Dallas homicide detective in charge of the initial investigation seems to think that Irving wasn't necessarily involved, but is withholding something. Perhaps, and this is only speculation, Irving did drop Delisa off at Kiki's wake, and her fiancé was there waiting, and he was angered to see her anywhere near another man. Perhaps he began beating Delisa, who accidentally pocket-dialed her sister in the struggle. Her sister hearing a man's voice, the beating, and Delisa's screams. Something that would certainly fit the fiancé's personality and past behavior, which was controlling and beyond overbearing. Perhaps Travis Irving is scared to tell what he knows, scared of what might happen to him if he tells the truth. But, on the other hand, maybe he is responsible for Delisa's slang and just protecting himself. Either way, there is no evidence to suggest his involvement. On Tuesday, June 10, 2014, Delisa Kelly's family and friends gathered in protest outside the Dallas Police Department. Her family was frustrated at the lack of communication from the department. They had no idea what was happening with the investigation. It's well known that in a murder investigation, police can't lay all their cards out on the table for the public, even the family, to see. And Delisa's family certainly knew that, but they needed some sort of dialogue, reassurance that the department was doing everything they could to find her killer. Among those there that day was Delisa's sister, LaShawn.
We do feel like we're in the dark, and basically we just want answers. But at least let us know that y'all are still out there searching. Don't just leave us out to hang. Like, we don't know anything. Y'all not communicating.
Since Delisa's brutal murder, the Kelly Foundation had been formed to advocate for the placement of an alert system for missing adults, like the Amber Alert for children and the Silver Alert for the elderly. They were calling for the creation of what they called the Kelly Alert. Such an alert might have saved Delisa's life, though the handling of her disappearance by 911, called in only an hour and a half after it happened, seemed to doom Delisa's case from the start. If Sergeant Kevin Mansell had taken Delisa's grandmother's call seriously, if 911 had recognized the seriousness of the accidental call from Delisa's phone to her sister Jasmine, perhaps she and her unborn baby would still be alive. The discovery of Delisa's body made it crystal clear that what her sister heard when she accidentally called the night she disappeared was the beginning of the end of her life. To satiate the family's anger over how Sergeant Mansell handled Delisa's disappearance, his lackadaisical attitude, inappropriate jokes, and his laughing, the Dallas Police Department launched an investigation into the call between him and the operator who took the call. Sergeant Mansell was placed on a 5-day administrative leave during the investigation, and adding salt to the wound, was ultimately disciplined with a 1-day suspension. But it was hardly the last time Sergeant Mansell would be involved in a controversy. On August 10, 2016, a 32-year-old man named Tony Tempa was high on cocaine. Tony had been off his medication for schizophrenia and anxiety, and at some point during his binge, Tony Tempa became panicked and paranoid. Now, it must be noted that individuals suffering from schizophrenia, an extremely debilitating and potentially dangerous disorder for the sufferer, often self-medicate to relieve the symptoms associated with their dysphoria, plenty of studies have shown. Even without the cocaine, which is a common go-to for relief of the symptoms associated with schizophrenia, Tony Tempa was likely having an episode. He called 911, telling the operator he feared for his own safety. But his safety, it turned out, wasn't on the mind of responding officers at all. Before police arrived, Tony's behavior became increasingly frantic and erratic. He was running through traffic on West Mockingbird Lane in Dallas, frenzied by the mixture of cocaine and his untreated mental health conditions. The security guard of an adult video store where Tony had called 911 outside handcuffed him until police arrived. Tony Tempa was unarmed. When Dallas police officers arrived, they zip-tied his ankles and pinned Tony face down in the grass. One officer's knee on his back, bearing down the weight of his body, Tony was screaming for his life as he gasped for air.
Held him down like this because they had him just sitting down. He's like rolling like a roller coaster, man. I was like,
he's not schizophrenia.
Yeah.
He definitely got kicked. He took something.
The officer knelt on Tony Tempa's back for 14 minutes, again, his entire body weight pinning the man to the ground. But it took 11 minutes for Tony to become unresponsive. When Tony became silent, the officers began making fun of the dying man, mocking his cries for help, and joked about hoping he'll wake up in time for school the next morning.
Tony.
Tony!
Tony! Time for school. Wake up.
I don't want to go to school.
Five more minutes, Mom.
First day, you can't be late.
Tony.
We bought some new shoes for the first day of school. Come on.
Made breakfast, scrambled eggs, your favorite.
What, waffles?
Waffles.
Rudy tooty fruity waffles. I think he's out cold now.
Yeah,
he might wake him up. I don't know, he just got quiet.
All of a sudden, just bloop.
In the dark here?
Hope I didn't kill him.
With all this weed shit.
I love how this became a weed.
Yeah.
We ain't friends.
I hope I didn't kill him, Officer Dustin Dillard can be heard saying. He did kill him. Tony Tempa's cause of death was ruled by the Dallas County Medical Examiner as homicide. Though Dillard and two other officers present were charged with misdemeanor deadly conduct, those charges were later dropped. Charged alongside Dillard was Sergeant Kevin Mansell. As we know from the 911 tapes concerning Delisa Kelly's disappearance, Sergeant Mansell didn't mind making jokes and laughing at folks when they were in a life-and-death situation. When charges were dropped against the officers concerning the death of Tony Tempa, a police spokesperson failed to mention the joke of a disciplinary action taken against Sergeant Mansell for his handling of Delisa's disappearance when he said the officer had a, quote, spotless disciplinary record. In December of 2014, after Delisa's murder and before Tony Tempa was killed as the result of police restraint, a petition was created on the website change.org calling for the Dallas police to fire Sergeant Mansell. Only 310 folks signed it. Sergeant Kevin Mansell has since retired. During the initial investigation, Delisa's fiancé, of course, was investigated. However, it seems nothing came of it. No hard evidence of his involvement. Delisa's mother, LaShondra, says that he was checked for bruising or scratches caused by Delisa defending herself against her attacker, and he had none. Her fiancé, though, is a big guy, standing over 6 feet tall, almost a foot taller than her. He's fit, muscular. The Dallas police also looked over Delisa's fiancé's apartment, but found no signs of a struggle having taken place there. It is important to remember, though, that Delisa, who lived with this man when she went missing, was planning to leave him. His control over her movements, social interactions, and family interactions during their relationship was suffocating and was, plain and simple, abuse. In fact, I was told about a disturbing incident that took place concerning Delisa's fiancé's suffocating control. When she was on the telephone with her sister, who was attending a Louisiana university at the time, Delisa's fiancé demanded to know who was on the phone. She told him to chill. It was just her sister. He left for work and the sisters continued to talk. Having turned most of the lights off in the apartment, it was dark, and when Delisa caught something move out of the corner of her eye, she freaked out a little, but brushed it off. They kept talking. Again, she saw something move. Delisa got up and flipped on the lights, and there, in the corner of the room, was her fiancé. He'd left the apartment but snuck back in to eavesdrop on Delisa's conversation with her sister. The abuse and control, of course, don't necessarily make Delisa's fiancé a murderer, I get that, but they're factors that are hard to ignore. Months passed and the year turned to 2015 with little to no movement on Delisa's case. Local group Justice Seekers Texas began aiding Delisa's family with efforts to get the Kelly Alert going. To reporters, Reverend Ronald Wright of that group expressed his concern about how Sergeant Mansell handled Delisa's disappearance.
Had they set a patrol in that area, it may have prevented this young lady from being murdered. When you've been reported that there's a disturbance and you can hear noise in the background, that should give you an immediate response to go out and see what's going on.
Delisa Kelly's family and Justice Seekers Texas sought to potentially save the lives of adults who go missing by implementing the Kelly Alert system. But getting it passed through state lawmakers turned out to be a long, arduous process. It still really isn't a thing. A bill presented before the Texas legislature's 2015 session stalled. In March 2016, Delisa Kelly's family filed a lawsuit against the city of Dallas for the police department's failure to act when her grandmother called 911 and relayed the circumstances of the 24-year-old mother's disappearance. The lawsuit stated, quote, "From the tone of Delisa's voice and statements, it was clear that her life was in jeopardy, and it was, or should have been, obvious that there was imminent danger in process. This is indicative of the disregard with which the police viewed domestic violence cases against women and/or racial minorities." End quote. Those statements are certainly not wrong. Delisa's wasn't the only case that suggested a major problem involving the city's 911 system and domestic violence calls. In Southeast Dallas, Deanna Cook was murdered by her ex-husband in 2012 and called 911 while the attack was occurring. She could be heard screaming for her life on the call, and her ex-husband told her he was going to kill her. The 911 operator didn't tell responding officers these facts, only that it was a domestic disturbance, and when they found Deanna's home, police knocked, but no one answered. They looked around the apartment a little, but saw and heard nothing, so the officers left. That was on a Friday, and Deanna Cook's body wasn't found until the following Sunday, when family members came to the home and saw water pouring out of the apartment. They called 911 and the family was told they needed to check hospitals and jails before they'd send any officers to the home to check it out. Receiving absolutely no help whatsoever from the system put in place specifically to help, the family broke down Deanna's door and found her dead in the bathtub. Deanna Cook's ex-husband had killed her, and he was later convicted of such. The lawsuit brought against the city of Dallas, the point of it, was to force the city to revamp the 911 system, and it's been dragged out. Meanwhile, legislation to enact the Kelly Alert stalled again in 2017.
You have the Amber Alert that's for children, and you have the Silver Alert that's for elderly people, but you have nothing for us. So I wanted to save our lives as well, you know, so that everyone could have that safety net,
LaShondra Kelly said. The bill was back on the books in 2019, 3 years after the Kelly family went to Austin and personally met with Governor Greg Abbott. He told them as soon as it came to him, he'd sign off on it. Finally, in June of 2019, the Kelly Alert was signed into law, but it's hardly up and running. The alert, which applies to everyone in the middle of the Amber Alert and the Silver Alerts, folks ages 18 to 64, was later renamed the Clear Alert. Named now after five young women who might have benefited from the system. Kaylee Mandotti, the C in Clear, was a 19-year-old San Antonio woman whose boyfriend raped and beat her until she was badly disfigured and later died from the injuries. Kaylee's killer was said to be possessive and controlling, with a history of violence. The Ellenclear is for Delisa, though her name starts with a D. 19-year-old Erin Castro of San Antonio is the E. She was stabbed in the neck by her boyfriend before he ran over her with his car, put it in reverse, ran over her again, and got out of the vehicle and kicked her. She'd been on the phone with her mother when the attack initially started, but since there was no alert for someone her age in place, an alert was not issued. The A in clear is for Virginia State 19-year-old Ashanti Billy, who disappeared on her way to open up the sandwich shop she worked for. Her body was found in North Carolina 3 months after she vanished. Ashanti died of undetermined trauma, her killer a 45-year-old stalker. The R in clear stands for the rest. Many believe Delisa Kelly knew her killer well. The brutality of her murder, that she was, by all indications, kept alive and tortured, suggesting that whoever committed the unspeakable and depraved violence perhaps felt she'd slighted them. Her mother, Lashandra, told me she had theories but recognizes that any one of them could be wrong, and she does not want to lay guilt on an innocent person. On the anniversaries of her daughter's murder, Lashandra hands out flyers in the Oak Cliff area, hoping to generate new information. Perhaps at some point, someone with information will grow a conscience and come forward. She's received messages on social media that contain screenshots of folks claiming to know what happened to Lisa, and a message telling her to look into a guy whose criminal record indicates a long past of sex trafficking. I've been unable to gather any details of his convictions. Delisa's case is cold, and Lashandra says it's just too painful for her two sisters to speak about. They expected justice to come at some point, but as the 7-year mark approaches, still nothing. No new leads, and no evidence that the Dallas Police Department is actively working the case. Lashandra deals with bouts of depression and likely anger, particularly when Delisa's son, Dunye, who was 2 years old when his mother died and is almost 9 years old now, wonders why his mother isn't there. Delisa's distinctive laugh, though, which has luckily been captured on video, helps. If you have any information about the kidnapping and murder of Delisa Michelle Kelly, please contact the Dallas Police Homicide Special Investigations Unit at 214-671-3584. Or if you have information and wish to remain anonymous, please contact the Crime Stoppers hotline at 877-373-8477. If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic abuse or violence, please get help before it's too late by calling the National Domestic Abuse Hotline at 800-799-SAFE or 800-799-7233. If you'd like to help find answers for the families of unsolved crime victims from all over, or help identify a Jane or John Doe, please visit DNA Solves, where you can submit your DNA data from a consumer testing company like Ancestry or 23andMe to their database. We'll provide a link in the show notes. You can support Gone Cold at patreon.com/GoneColdPodcast. Donors at all levels there get the show ad-free, and for just $2.50, you'll receive access to episodes featuring stories of mostly solved Texas crimes and the bad actors who perpetrated them, such as the woman in the wooden box and the Monday afternoon murderer. Thanks to everyone who supports us there. It means the world to Eric and I, and we couldn't do this without you. The Dallas Morning News, The New York Daily News, NBCDFW.com, CBSNews.com, WFAA.com, Fox4News.com, Fox7Austin.com, MySanAntonio.com, and the study Reasons for Increased Substance Use in Psychosis by Lindsay Gregg, Christine Barroclo, and Jillian Haddock were used as sources for this episode. Thanks for listening, y'all.